On America Can We Talk, I talk about election integrity, border security, healthcare freedom, race relations, energy and tax policy, education policy, free speech and assembly, freedom of religion, and all other issues that touch on the God-given right of every American to life, liberty, and the pursuit of their version of happiness. Stay tuned. You preach your tolerance, but lecture me. Is there no end to your own hypocrisy? Your God is power, you have no shame. Your only interest is political gain. You hide your eyes and refuse to listen. You play your game.
Coming up next, America Can We Talk with your host, Debbie Georgiatos.
And hello and welcome to America Can We Talk. I'm Debbie Georgiatos. I'm doing the show from our Austin studio. You can obviously tell, not the usual studio. In the background, you may be able to see that beautiful site, the Texas State Capitol, which is very relevant because today we have joining us in just a moment a candidate to serve in the Texas State House, Abraham George. Before we turn to him and my very quick first five, I just want to make the point, I have never been more proud to be a Texan at this time, as we have a border convoy, a large number of trucks, basically trucks, large trucks, pickup trucks, making their way down, not just at the southern border, but they went down through the heart of Texas, down to the southern border to show support for Governor Abbott and for his determination to stand up for a secure border in Texas, to speak out and to resist what is the Biden administration's absolute determination to stop Texas from enforcing the border. This is I'm so proud of this convoy, how they conducted themselves. I happen to have a couple of friends who are in the convoy, texting, hearing about it. They went through small town after small town after small town. And these are towns, majority Hispanic. This is not a tour of, you know, supposed just white communities. This is a tour of real Texas. Many, many small towns, majority Hispanic towns. And the people lined the streets, waving flags, giving them thumbs up. They were thrilled and excited to see this convoy, thrilled and excited to see Texans standing up for the idea of a strong border, standing with Governor Abbott and with the other governors. There have been 25 other states that have signed on in support of Governor Abbott. 15 governors signed on to be down there with Texas Governor Abbott at the border to send the message, to reinforce the message to Washington. We are a nation that must have borders. We insist on sovereignty. We insist on being a sovereign nation, and we stand with Governor Abbott. I'm going to turn to our interview in a moment, but I want to tease to say, I'm going to tie this point about the border demonstration to what happened in Washington with respect to an immigration bill that the Senate Republicans initially apparently signed on to with the Democrats, which essentially was an utter capitulation on immigration, an utter capitulation to the radical left that is taking this country down through their failure to enforce immigration rules and is spending, you know, just untold buckets of billions of dollars again to the Ukraine and virtually nothing for the American southern border. I will get back to that in a moment. But to close the first five, I want to say this. If you are seeing headlines about this border, this convoy of trucks that went down to the border, in fact, I'll read you one of them to tell you the kind of headlines that when you are a left-wing outlet, you put out. The Washington Post, this was actually a headline describing the border convoy, the people showing up at the border to stand strong with Governor Abbott, to insist on secure border. Washington Post headline, Texas border showdown is far right magnet. Hate trackers warn. They're trying to say that people who follow Where is the Hate in America? They're trying to say people who would want a secure border, who would show up at Texas border to insist on border security, that they are far right and that they are driven by hate. And they actually try in the course of this trash article to compare the people who are in the convoy standing up for the Texas border, try to compare them to the people who were in January 6 protests, whom they also tried to smear with no justification. I'll get back to that story later because I do want to tell you more about how this border issue, it really conflates with, is related to the immigration bill in Washington, which has, at least at the moment, seems to be crashing and burning because the voters in this country, the constituents, the people, discovered what their representatives in Washington were doing, selling out the conservative agenda, selling out Republicans, giving the Democrats basically everything they wanted. And because those people found out and they started to put pressure in Washington, now Mitch McConnell is now saying, oh, I'm not too sure we can do this border deal after he said he was going to back it. Same with even Senator Lankford from Oklahoma. More on him later. But for now, that, my very fine friends, is today's First Five. Okay, so we have joining us a gentleman who is a friend. He's also running for Texas State House. And in Texas, we have an unparalleled, a historic number of incumbent Texas Republicans who are facing for our Texas State House, facing a primary challenger. In this particular case, my friend who will join us in just a moment, named Abraham George, he is running for House District 89. And that is not where we live, but it's fairly near where we live in North Texas. And he has a background that's extremely interesting. We're going to talk about his background with driving him to run. I will tell you as a little point in introducing him, he's a former chairman of the Collin County Republican Party. My husband and I live in Collin County. It's basically, if you're not from Texas, it's north of Dallas. Collin County, lovely, lovely area, and so majority Republican. And he was a chairman of the Republican Party there, and just really beloved, respected, appreciated by so many people. And he stepped aside from that job to run, which is an unpaid job, to run for another nearly unpaid job, which is to serve in the Texas State House. Very happy to welcome to our show our candidate for Texas House District 89, Abraham George. Hi, Abraham.
How are you, Debbie?
I'm happy to see you. That's how I am. I'm glad you could do this. I know you're on the road doing your campaign, and we're actually on the road doing my campaign for RNC. We're down in Austin. But I'm so glad you could join us, and I'm so glad you're running. And I know I meant to say in the introduction, there is a fever pitch passion in Texas surrounding many, many Texas House races because there's a sense that the Texas House has kind of over time capitulated a lot, kind of so the Republican majority doesn't act like a majority. And there's just a sense that many candidates running, we're gonna begin to reassert the Republican spirit and leadership in the Texas State House. So that's my view of this race. So let's just actually quick start with, why are you running for Texas State House?
Well, you're spot on. You know, I was the chairman, as you mentioned earlier, I was the chairman of the Republican Party here in Collin County. And my job essentially is very simple. It was to elect Republicans. And
okay, we might have lost this connection. Okay, they're going to try to reestablish that connection. You know, he's remote in a car. I'm actually in the studio in Austin. And Zig, you just have to tell me when we have him, okay? But while we're reconnecting with him, I will quickly tell you, my happy listeners, so Abraham George, you heard a little bit of him speaking. He does have an accent. He grew up in India, the country of India, born in Kerala, India. But he's a child of gospel-preaching parents. His parents are Christian gospel teachers. He embraced Christianity at a young age in his life, came to America. His family actually came here legally, spot on, imagine that. Came here after a 14-year quest for U.S. visas. Do we have him? No. Okay. So we got him. Okay. We're going to bring him right back. And Ziggy, my amazing producer, I meant to say thank you to him. Ziggy, my producer down here, is going to bring back Abraham George.
I can see you guys and hear you guys. I'm not sure if you guys can see me and hear me.
Oh, yes, we can.
Okay. So, during the introduction, you said that you're spot on that. I was the chairman of the Republican Party here in Collin County, and my job was to elect Republicans and push Republican priorities. And unfortunately, what we see in the Republican counties and like Collin County here is we will have someone get elected using the Republican name and go to the D.C. or to Austin and end up doing what a Democrat would do. My opponent, along with many other representatives from Collin County and other areas in the state of Texas, goes out to Washington, D.C. and puts Democrats in committee chairmanships, which is the most craziest thing you can imagine because we have the majority in Texas House and the Democrats control the Texas committees, the House committees. So this happened many times over the years, and the Republican caucus, which is the convention, comes together every other year, and we have a priority set up by the convention of delegates, and most of the time, those get killed. And that's, it just keep happening to a group of people who are happening by a group of people who call themselves Republicans and just doesn't get any Republican priorities done. So finally, to a point, I got, you know, people were asking me, would you run? And I said, it's really not something I'm looking forward to. But during the last few months, you guys know about Ken Paxton impeachment. When that took place, it was very clear that where our Republican representatives stand, they stand with the Democrats all the time. They stand with them to kill our border bills. They will stand with them to impeach Attorney General Ken Paxton. They will stand with them to kill our Republican priorities. So when that happened, throughout the state of Texas, I think somewhere between 35 or 40 incumbents are being challenged this year. That's the story behind me deciding to run for office, other than the county chairman office, which is what I loved, and it was great. It's a great gig, but I'm campaigning now.
It's a great gig. Yes, it is. I'll have to say, though, and because I've been around a lot of Republican county chairmen, you were very popular. I mean, there are some people, I think, who kind of get tired of the job because, you know, too many detractors, too many critics. And you're really fair to everyone, very engaging and very actually hands-on active, not just, you know, phoning it in, as some people do. So that's a pretty stable place to be. And I mentioned earlier, not that this is relevant to why you would run, but the Texas State House, I mean, the salary is basically zero. I mean, I'm not kidding you. The salary for a Texas State rep is $7,200 a year, not even $8,000 a year. I mean, that's way below poverty level. So the point being, no one runs to a Texas House because of the great salary. But coming back to our guests, I want to make sure you have a chance to, I just want to say your service as county party chair was so well respected. Your service, as I'm sure will be if you were to prevail in this race. But, you know, and the things we hit on, because you mentioned briefly, in Texas we have a huge issue because the Texas State Speaker of the House continually appoints Democrat chairs to head up committees. And so a lot of good legislation dies in the Democrat committees, and Republicans who are incumbents can say, well, it wasn't my fault, I would have voted for it, but look, they killed it in the House. It gives them cover, this whole practice of appointing Democrat chairs. And I know you said you don't like that and you would oppose that, and the only reason that can occur is because of the process in the past that we talked about on the show ad nauseum. Michael Quinn Sullivan did this video about a mini documentary on it called The Texas Heist, about how we end up electing a person who is Speaker of the House, has an R by his name, but who does the bidding of the Democrats. He's really chosen by the Democrats, and the Republicans just put up with it rather than standing up. I know you don't like that. I'm sure you don't like that, correct?
I don't like that, and I made a pledge to my people in my district that I will not support a speaker who is going to put Democrats in charge of any committees. It doesn't matter how small the committee is or the big the committee is, any speaker, it doesn't matter if it's Dade Phelan or someone else, if they are putting a Democrat in charge of any committee, that will be one of my biggest conditions to support a specific person for a speakership.
Love that. I know also, and you're actually, and Z, can you put his chyron back up? I want to make sure people can see how to find his website, because this is really, we're down to the wire here in Texas. We have our primaries March 5th, which is coming right up. And we have, prior to that, we have early voting. I think it's February 20th. So this person we're talking to is Abraham George, abrahamgeorge.com. I want to say that a few times before as we continue talking, Abraham. But one thing I told you before we started, I love the story that you have on in your bio at your website, Abraham George. I'm sorry, please leave that up, that chyron. Please, Ziggy, if you would. His chyron, thank you, abrahamgeorge.com. You told a story about coming to America from India, and your family, as I mentioned, introducing you, they came legally, they waited till they had visas, and you came to realize in 2008 that people in your community were expecting you, everyone in the community, to vote for Barack Obama. So tell, how'd you react to that? Tell how you reacted to that.
Well, it was, you know, one of those things. Before that, I was not involved in politics. I really didn't care for it. My goal was to make a living and, you know, build a business and all of that stuff that an average American focused their time on. And during that time, this presidential election is coming up, and people started to talk about the presidential election in Indian community, which is where I'm at. And they, most of them, kind of told me or expected me and everyone else to support Barack Obama. And the only reason is he's black. That's the other than that, they didn't really care about the policies because most Indians are conservatives at heart and they do support conservative values. They don't like big government. They don't like to pay a lot of taxes. They like to have a good law enforcement presence in the neighborhood they live in. So all of those things that Republican Party supports is what they believe in. Because he is black, most of the people were expected or being pushed to support him. And I said, this is 2-3 years after I started a small business. And I said, I don't like these policies. I don't like Democrat policies because I looked at it. It is awful to the country and for small business owners, for families. I just don't want to support this guy. And there was this whole look at most people's like, what is going on with this? This is not we're minorities. We're supposed to support another minority. That's when I realized the Indian community in United States needs a wake-up call. Someone needs to start telling them, this is not our values. This is not what we believe in. And I ended up going to Dallas County Republican Party's headquarters back then, which was close to my office, and said, hey, what kind of tools do you guys have? How do I reach out to people in my community? Do you have any programs, anything that I can get on to help you and help me and my community to come to the Republican Party? So that was the beginning of my involvement in politics.
I love that. And I have to tell you, he freeze again? Okay. One reason I really love that is because I think what happens in Austin, I think a lot of people, or in Washington, they run, they actually say what they believe in, they intend to pursue what they believe in, they get down to Austin or up to Washington, and they are just surrounded by people who are kind of pressuring them or implying, you really, to get along, to go along, you got to vote this way, you don't want to vote that way, and you got to do this, and don't do that. And even though they wouldn't consciously say, I became the swamp, they become the swamp. They just become easily pushed around. So I think this character trait you're describing of just not willing to salute when you're being told this is how you should vote because you happen to be a member of the Indian community, it's a character thing. And I really, really commend that. And I think it speaks to how you likely would be in Austin, which is not pushed around, but by sticking to your principles. I don't know if you want to respond to that, but I really do commend you for that.
I really appreciate you saying that. It means a lot to me. One of the things people ask me is, how are you going to be different from your opponent? And my answer to the people so far has been, and it will be, is I know who is my boss is. It's the people, it's the citizens in my district. It's not the lobbyists, it's not the leadership or the Republican caucus. It is the people in my district, and they elect me. I represent them. I'm their mouthpiece, nothing more than that. So I really appreciate you saying that.
I appreciate you very much. And one other thing I was going to mention, the other thing that happens in Austin, Washington, and many other places is once entrenched power is established, as example in Austin, you have a current Speaker of the House, and he's got a pool of money available, a very large pool of money. I thought for the longest time it just came from the state party, but it doesn't. I mean, some does maybe, but it comes from lobbyists, a massive, massive pile of money from lobbyists, who then, when you are the Speaker of the House, in our case, is Dade Phelan, parcels out that money. And campaigns cost money. I'm discovering this even in this RNC race. They cost money. And if you've got someone who's an insider with a big pile and says, look, Abraham George, here's a big bunch of money, $50,000 or whatever they would offer. And, all you have to do is say this, don't say that, stand for this, don't stand for that. People buy in. They need the money. And so I don't know if your incumbent opponent has accepted money from Dade Phelan or not. I actually don't know the answer.
I do know the answer to it. Yes, she has accepted money from Dade Phelan. She has accepted money from Texas TLR, which is the one of the largest lobby firms out in Austin, who supports mostly moderate Republican ideology, like the going after Ken Paxton for his impeachment, things like that. So she has accepted a fairly large amount of money, thousands of dollars. My understanding from my consultants is a little over $80,000 so far.
Wowee, I would like $80,000 in my campaign. Not from that source. Anyway, so I think that is a big issue for people, because I think when you, people are, candidates are good speakers, they show up at events, they say all the right buzzwords, they got the talking points ready, and people think, wow, that sounds great. But when you recognize the funding, it doesn't come without strings. Put the other way, it comes with strings attached about how you'll vote and what you won't do. So that's just a reality in politics. For any of our listeners, if you're interested in supporting getting Texas back on track with a more conservative legislature that actually represents the people of Texas and their values, I urge you to go check out abrahamgeorge.com. abrahamgeorge.com. It says Texas House District 89. Or he's also on Twitter at abrahamgeorge. You can follow him there. But so one last thing. I know you said people always ask you what you're going to do differently. I saw your priorities on Ballotpedia about making Texas strong, secure the border, build Texas economy. Is there one thing is like your dream issue you just would love to dive into and fight out when you get down there?
Well, yeah. So I think one of the things that we have to do, Texas is going to be a border state forever. Right. Mexico is there. It's a geographical issue. So I think it is time that we put a border force together for ourselves. The reason I say that is I understand this is not a state issue, but it is a state problem. We get all the problems because Biden is doing what he's doing. We don't know what the next Democrat president or even a Republican president will do. So the people in Texas have the right to defend themselves. It's kind of awkward and awful that we have to say things like this at this point in our life, that we are defending our own state from invasion by ourselves while we are part of the union. So I think it is time for us to put a border force together. And once we do it, I believe other Republican states, especially the border states, will do the same thing. And we the legislator, along with the governor, will have the authority to enforce our border policies that federal government would not do. So I think that's going to be number one issue for me. Election integrity is another major issue for me. Passing Republican priorities from the Republican convention, which is coming up in a couple of months, that's going to be a major issue for me. So those are the things I'm looking forward to working on.
Love it, love it. You made brief mention of the Ken Paxton situation in Texas, the impeachment by the House and the Senate trial happened. They did not remove him, so he's back as our AG. We were in Houston last night, actually. My husband and I were in Houston last night at a fundraiser for another candidate for Texas House, and Attorney General Ken Paxton was there. Honest to goodness, he is just, I would say a lot of politicians get pushed around. They get one accusation or one rumor started, and they back off, and they are attacked, and they just kind of crawl away. But, Ken Paxton he is, in my view, the nation's leading strongest attorney general. He goes more after it was first the Obama administration, now the Biden administration. He's relentless. I believe he's supporting your campaign. He's supporting a lot of people who are saying, we got to renew Texas. So just speak, if you would, just a minute to what your thoughts were about the impeachment of Ken Paxton.
Well, it was a sham impeachment. Honestly, during the first few days, I had no idea because I wasn't a big, we didn't know each other. Me and Ken, we known each other for a long time because he lives in Collin County, but we're not buddies. We don't go out and grab a drink. But when this happened, I reached out to him, reached out to Angela Paxton, to his campaign, to all of our representatives to see, hey, what is going on? Because being the county chair, one of the things I have to answer to is all of my precinct chairs. And there was this whole issue about this. And by the time the Senate trial was over, everyone was clear. Okay, this was just bunch of Democrats and bunch of Rhino Republicans coming together to go after him because he's the most conservative attorney general in the entire nation. So they want him out because there are a bunch of things they were looking for, like election things. He is standing between the George Soros money in coming into the election process and taking over the elections, just like they've done in many states. So those are the things they wanted to do, and he's standing in the middle of it. So he came out and he endorsed me, and I'm grateful for that. In fact, tomorrow evening we have a rally with Ken Paxton, and Matt Rinaldi is coming to my district. So we're going to have about a couple of hundred people there, and it will be wonderful at the Collin College in Wiley.
The Collin College in Wiley. Okay. That's actually, well, I'm not sure we're back. We're traveling a lot, but I love hearing you're doing that. There's just so much energy. So, Abraham George, first of all, thank you for stepping down from a really responsible job to run for an even more responsible job in the Texas State House. Thank you for running for Texas House District 89 against AbrahamGeorge.com. Or everyone check out this website, support this man. He is someone who stands on principle. Love that story about your decision back in 2008. Can't get on board with Obama because it was ideas that matter, not race, ethnicity, national origin. Love that.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, great.
This has been wonderful.
Great to see you. Thank you, Abraham. Thanks for joining me. Okay, my friends, that is one great candidate, I'm telling you. Okay, so what I'm going to try to do, I want to go back. I said the first five, I think I had the title was, you know, take our border back and the convoy and the border bill sellout. I want to embellish a little bit more about that. So the rally, this convoy, take our border back, is a large number of trucks, and there actually is happening all over the country, kind of playing off of or continuation of in Canada, where they had that massive truckers rally, this realization that if you're on the roads in public, you're getting attention and people see what are they stirred up about? And then, so what this border thing is doing, this convoy now down at the Texas border is trying to draw attention to the fact that the people want a secure border. America wants a border in force. It's also a recognition that for many people in America, it is the case that is the people are a little bit ahead, a little bit smarter, or a little bit more tuned in and aware than even some of the elected representatives who have an R by their name, let alone a D by their name. But the people are more alert and they are more wise as to the issue about the border than even some of our elected officials. So the border convoy shows up. Remember I told you, Washington Post ran a headline basically trying to argue if you want a secure border, it's probably because you are far right hate tracker, far right hate, you know, whatever, you know, bigot. I mean, it's just absurd. And the reason the Washington Post runs stories like this is because what is occurring at the border, what the Obama-Biden regime, because this is really Obama running Biden, and we all know this, but this is the Obama-Biden regime basically saying to America, you know, we're not going to enforce the border and there's nothing you can do about it. You're just going to suffer with it. You're going to live with the fact we have drug traffickers, sex traffickers, you know, tens of thousands of people tied to the Chinese Communist Party, CCP, single men, military age, coming across our border. And the Biden team is saying to America, we're going to abandon the border. We don't do border security, and we're not going to let anybody else do that. This is exactly and only what the message is of the Biden administration. So the people, I am hearing the people broadly, we the people in this country, are starting to rise up, are starting to say, actually, you know what? We're not going to just let you take down our country. People see this for what it is a globalist attack on the notion of a sovereign nation. It's a globalist funded, orchestrated attack on America. And the people are just saying, you know, we're going to find a means legitimately and legally to make a broad, big public statement, which is what this border convoy is. So Washington Post, it's trash, trash assessment of it all. And I'm going to turn more in a minute to the border and the immigration bill. But I just want to point out also, this is being played out. This issue is being played out around the world, which is basically, in big terms, it is the globalist, socialist, Marxist, communist, you know, movement in this world taking over, the World Economic Forum orchestrated, pushing the idea of climate change is going to kill us all, so we all have to surrender all of our freedom. Climate change being a big issue they push. COVID fear or fear of the next pandemic, next issue they push. And these issues, all of this that we're watching in the world, it's all tied together, even though the issues seem separate, whether it's COVID and the next pandemic policy and whether you should have to wear a mask and whether or not you get a shot or you're allowed to travel or whatever it is you're allowed to do. COVID is one big thing, massive, massive, massive issue that COVID is being used for. Climate change, another one. There are issues used by the left to manipulate people away from believing in the sovereignty of their nation, away from believing in their country and in their right to individual liberty, and toward believing the idea that we just have to succumb, bow to, and surrender to this massive globalist communist movement. And it's happening all over the world. I mentioned a minute ago, outside the EU Parliament, I didn't send Ziggy a picture in time, but outside the EU Parliament, which is the European Union Parliament, there are massive, massive farm vehicles lined up, parked on both sides of the road to the point you can't pass through them. A car couldn't go through. Parked outside the EU Parliament. These are people who are protesting ridiculous climate policies driven by absurd, unjustified climate fears. So farmers in Belgium have surrounded the European Parliament area with a message for Ursula von der Leyen, who is a president of the European Commission. In fact, they had a huge yellow letters written from afar, Ursula, we are here. And they're basically, they're protesting all of the green rulemaking that, you know, climate change hysteria rulemaking that has destroyed their farms, their animals, their livestock, their ability to have agriculture in Europe. So massive protests ongoing in Luxembourg and other places. Also massive protests in Poland. General strike in Poland. People are showing up in Poland. Same arguments. We're not going to let you use this climate change lunacy to take away our freedom. It's a beautiful thing. Also happening in France. And you notice the media in this country barely reports this, but this is kind of an international solidarity thinking around the idea of we're going to stand up for our freedom. We're not surrendering to the World Economic Forum globalist agenda. We're going to stand up for freedom and for sovereignty of our nations. And so that's what's happening at the border, and it's a beautiful thing. The other point, and I want to get to in the first five, but I want to be sure and get to our friend Abraham, is what happened in the United States Senate. And again, I want to tease you a little bit to tell you about how headlines mislead people. You've got to dig into the story. So the short story is that there was there is a great desire, as you likely know, on the side of Republicans, or at least some Republicans, to say, hey, we have to finish the wall. We have to reinforce our border, recreate our border, reinforce it. And so you have an effort to get border security money. And yet the Democrats have a slim majority in the Senate. And, you know, the House is almost even at this point. And so there was a deal negotiated. This was Senator Lankford from Oklahoma. I have a story about him if I get to time to it. But in any case, Senator Lankford was the head alleged Republican negotiating this in the Senate. And they came up with a bill which was going to combine, because they couldn't do these bills freestanding. So combined aid to Ukraine, which most Republicans are saying enough on the aid to Ukraine. They see it as a money laundering, you know, money pit that will never end. And it's not ending the war. I mean, they're just, we can't go into Ukraine today except to say most Republicans have figured out in this country, we're done funding the Ukraine thing. We're just done. So we had so the Ukraine funding, border funding, and immigration policy all wrapped up into one bill. And this is the idea that, you know, Lankford, Senator Lankford, and others on the right, the conservatives, actually negotiated this bill. And I'm going to turn to some language. So that there was a okay, I got to find this. You know, we're traveling, so I can't print stuff out. So I'm just texting myself to get these things. No, story. So anyway, so Lankford came up with this bill. And when people realized what was in it, they were so outraged. And one thing that just one little factoid, if people say, what was so wrong with the Senate bill? The Senate bill that Lankford and other Republicans came up with, it gave Ukraine, as we've already said, billions and billions and billions and billions, Ukraine 75 times as much funding as they gave for the U.S. border wall, which, you know, the Biden administration won't let you build anyway. 75 times as much money to the Ukraine as to the border bill. That was one issue. So it was basically 50 billion, B as in boy, billion, to go to Ukraine, and 650 million, M as in measly, million, to go to reinforce the border. And so, I mean, the poll after poll, these people in Washington, they know that the Republican voters and basically most of America is saying, stop funding Ukraine, please enforce the border. So they end up putting a bill together, which they were saying, oh yeah, this does both. And Lankford's trying to defend it. You know, this is a really great bill, I swear. Okay, so you know, you look at different headlines out of places. One bill tried to make it sound like it was really, really, really harsh in immigration. Senators unveil bipartisan bill to impose tougher asylum and border laws. It's a bill to fund Ukraine, and a few people got a few points in trying to say, can't we do something about border security? Can we do something about the wall? So that they had that headline. And of course, the Washington Post is all over saying anybody who actually thinks we should, you know, address the immigration problem and try to fix it, those people are all racist. That's how they write them off. And so it was a massive bill. And I'm getting around to saying that what really happened in Washington was enough people got wind of what was in the bill that there was began to be pushback against Republicans who went along with it. Pushback to the point that I believe the bill has now died in the Senate. On top of that, you know, Lankford is from this state, I hate to admit it, Oklahoma is more conservative than Texas. It's actually more Republican dominated than Texas, you know, per capita. So the Oklahoma Republican Party approved a resolution over the weekend condemning and censuring Senator James Lankford, the state's senior senator, for his role in the ongoing bipartisan border negotiations. They actually use the language to Lankford, he must cease and desist, jeopardizing the security and liberty of the people of Oklahoma, and said it will withhold their support for him until he ends the negotiations. I wanted to say this is another example of the people rose up. They got such a message to Washington, such a message to, you know, the activists in Oklahoma, the GOP there, that they turned on Lankford and said, you've got to stop. Stop surrendering. Stop surrendering. Stop negotiating something. All you're doing is giving more power to the left. And then what's happened since then, of course, they've had governors. I had a list of the people who said they won't sign the bill. Okay, this is a problem. I have to text myself to find anything. And in any case, there were people now, here they are, people who will not support this bill. They put up publicly Rand Paul, naturally, thank God, Marjorie Taylor Greene, John Barrasso, Steve Daines. These are all senators. Ted Cruz, great state of Texas. Mike Lee, Steve Scalise, Bob Menendez, Marsha Blackburn, Tom Cotton, Rick Scott, Tim Scott, and a J.D. Vance, even a Democrat from California said, I can't sign on with this. I'm getting to the point, I just want to step back to say, the reason I wanted to hammer this a little bit today is because what happens when you go up to Washington and you get inside the clubby crowd and, you know, we're all here together to govern. We're kind of the ruling class. And, you know, we're a bit of a uniparty. We rule. And there's these people out in the, you know, hinterland somewhere, these peasants out there, you know, and we have to go to them and talk to them. They have to vote for us. But, you know, we don't really have to listen to them. And so Lankford, from a conservative bastion state like Oklahoma, was basically going to give away everything to be the author of, to get the headlines, to get the cocktail party invitations, because he created a bill that essentially capitulated 100% to the Democrats. That's what it would have done. And so fortunately, because the public became aware of it and many, many actual conservatives piled on, you know, now you've had the GOP in Oklahoma censure Lankford, and you had a statement out by Mitch McConnell, Senator McConnell, minority leader in the Senate, who was behind the bill, not saying, well, you know, we're not so sure. We have to redo some of these provisions. I shouldn't imitate him. But seriously, it takes involvement politically to get the message to people, especially those who've sat in power too long. They've sat there. They think they're the ruling class. They're making all sorts of stuff up. And we end up with people coming up with a bill destructive to America. That's what the bill was. And fortunately, lots and lots of social commentary made that point to him, to the point that now Lankford's saying, I'm not so sure I can support my own bill. This is a really good thing. And, you know, I just, on this border convoy thing, there is a passionate uprising spirit in America I love. It is the people remembering again that the Constitution gave us the power. We are the people. We are the sovereign. We are actually the governors. We choose our government. And I have to tell you, I've learned so much in this campaign for RNC, for RNC Committeewoman for Texas, that I've begun to realize there are many, many people out there fighting, speaking up, trying to get their voices heard. This is an era of just tremendous, wonderful, informed, intelligent activism on the part of people who want to defend America and its very existence. So on that note, I'm going to turn to the topic. I call this, I think, American Justice System, Tina Peters plus J6 Middletons. On the subject of people awakening to what's happening to our country and awakening to the great damage the anti-American left is doing to this country, the Marxist, socialist, communist movement that is now has a stranglehold on the Democrat Party, that controls the Democrat primaries, controls the Democrat Party, its platform. That is where they are ideologically. It's where the left lives. And so what they're doing to our country matters significantly. It matters what they're doing. And one of the things the left has been very successful so far at doing is actually the beginnings of the destruction of America's rule of law, our justice system. And so the two stories I want to touch on briefly, things happening this week. One is that my good friend Tina Peters, former, just a stellar, lovely, educated, lovely, just salt of the earth American, happened to also be the county clerk in Mesa County, Colorado. And as county clerk, without going into the whole story yet again, she uncovered massive fraud arising out of the Dominion voting machines. She discovered, she exposed that fraud. In fact, I will urge you, if you've read nothing else about this, to read, just put in your Google search bar, Mesa County Report Number 3. Mesa County Report Number 3. And you will read what she was able to uncover about the absolute abject fraud that was happening in Colorado with respect and along with using the Dominion voting machines. So what she did, she basically uncovered this fraud and it became public. And then before she even did the investigation herself and after, she went to her superiors to say, I'm only the county clerk here. You guys are the county commissioners. You should look into this. There's something really wrong happening in the Dominion voting machines. And they wouldn't listen to her. They told her to be quiet, to stop talking about, to stop looking into it. So she, Tina Peters, enabled this study, which now everyone calls Mesa County Report Number 1, Mesa County Report Number 2, Number 3. Well, she goes to trial this week. And this is, it's actually next week, February 7th. So that's Wednesday, that's tomorrow. So Tina Peters goes to trial in Colorado for tomorrow. I want you to understand what she's charged with. She uncovered irrefutable proof of the fraud in the Dominion voting machines in Mesa County, Colorado. That's what she uncovered. And because what she uncovered was then studied by actual forensic experts who were able to dig in and explain exactly what the machines were doing, the charge that she's facing she's a whistleblower. She went to the public to take the steps to shed light for America on the truth of our electoral systems. So she's being persecuted for the information she revealed, which is why, okay, so I want to get to what she actually did. Is being persecuted for information? Yeah. Okay, the point is, the charge against her is that she went to the county commissioners to say, you really should look into the Dominion voting machines because this is a big problem. I mean, she uncovered an anomaly that anyone sane looking at the anomaly realized something is wrong here. That could not have happened. It was basically in Grand Junction, Colorado, when there was a 5 or 7 member city council election, and 4 people who were up were, the county is like whatever it is, 75% Republican. Republicans always win everything. And they had a city council race, and four people up, 4 seats were open, and they were all won by Democrats, and Democrats no one had ever heard of. And it was the most absurd thing. That's when she realized, this can't be right. This could not be how Mesa County voted. And so she began her investigation then. I'm getting back to saying to you, the way they have set up this charge against her, she cannot introduce evidence of the proof that she obtained about the fraud in the election machines. That's not relevant in this trial, because all she's charged with is going to her superiors and saying, you really ought to look into the Dominion voting machines. You need to look into the voting machine problem we've had here in Mesa County. That's what she's charged with. She's charged with asking them to please do their jobs, to please look into this. And so what she ends up doing is, I want to read something from Tina, a text that she sent. But first I want to tell you, there's a tweet out by Professor David Clements who was talking about this. He's saying she's going to go on trial for her role. She's a whistleblower. She's persecuted for information she revealed. And then basically he talks about, it was confirmed on September 15, 2021, the data described in the Federal Elections Commission voting system standards mandated by Colorado law were destroyed by the system vendor. Okay. First thing she uncovered, the data described in the Federal Elections Commission 2002 voting system standards mandated by Colorado law were destroyed by the system vendor and the Secretary of State's office. And March 1st, 2022 reported that Mesa County's electronic voting systems contain 36 separate wireless devices, even though people say, but they're not connected to the internet, so it's not a problem. When her own research, corroborated by actual cyber experts, in Mesa County's election voting system, 36 separate wireless devices. And the third report, March 19, 2022, found that there was creation of shadow databases. We've been over this at length in my show. Creation of shadow databases enabling illegal software and vote swapping. That's what she uncovered. She's uncovering truth, but she's headed to trial tomorrow. Nothing to do with any of these. She's charged with attempting to influence a public official because she went to the county commissioner saying, y'all should really look into this. This is really, really bad. That's what she's charged with. And I tell you this story, I'm going to get to January 6th in a moment. I tell you the story to say, this is an instance where an actual law-abiding, straight arrow person with nothing to be gained for what she's doing. She's not becoming famous, not becoming wealthy. She's just trying to pursue truth and expose the fraud she uncovered. And she's facing time in prison. And the people coming against her are so savvy, they're not charging her with something that allows her to say, okay, good, I get to present the evidence that was uncovered about these machines. All she can talk about is, did you go into the county commissioner's court and say you guys should look into this? Which, of course, is the answer is yes. They've set this up to lock her up. So she sent this message. It's very sad. I don't know if I can read the whole thing. It's so sad. But she's basically, where are all of the troops? Where are the people who care? She's basically saying, if she's convicted, she'll go right into jail custody. There should be a national story. It is a national story, except no big national media outlet cares. They're happy to repress and ignore absolute object fraud, which is what is going on in her case. The fraud of the judicial system, the legal system prosecuting her, and what she uncovered. So she talks about, I'm feeling very alone right now. Where are the patriots finishing this thing out? Please ask people to come to Colorado, get the word out, get folks to come to Grand Junction, or have me on to speak. I'm trying to get her on to speak again. But I want to, so this is, I tell you the story, I want you to think about it. This is happening in America. This is not some third world banana republic where they never follow the law anyway. This is happening right in front of our faces, virtually no media attention, except the kind of yellow journalism Washington Post engages in, where they mock people who want to defend the border. They mock people who report what happened in the Colorado elections and other places. Similarly, on the just kind of what time it is in America subject, Jaleese and Mark Middleton, who have been on my show, we've interviewed them. These are Texas farmers. These are simple, simple is the wrong word. These are wise, but these are basic average Americans, live on a farm, first political activity of their life. They went up to Washington because they were deeply concerned after the 2020 elections. So they went up to Washington on January 6, 2021. They engaged in no violence. They did not enter the Capitol. They basically stood on the lawn, public property, in a huddle with some other guy who was there praying for America, praying to restore our election system. And because an officer came along unprovoked, batted them with one of those really hard batons. I mean, the batons are not like, a wiffle ball bats. They hurt. Hit him and then her with this baton. They pushed him back just to get away and then ran away. They're being charged and they're in trial right now in Washington, facing both 20 years in prison. I want you to think about that. This is not third world banana republic. This is United States of America. And you think, if you don't understand why I'm telling you this story, it's because our country is under assault from the left and they will not allow the rule of law. They will not allow the equal application of justice. They will not allow truth to come out. They are steamrolling our country and our system. And God bless Jaleese and Mark Middleton and Tina Peters and everybody else still in the fight. It's among the many reasons I'm running for RNC Committee Woman for Texas, because more voices are informed, passionate, understand the legal ramifications, know what the left is doing. More voices like that are needed in Washington. Okay, my final story today, I could do a lot more on that, but I got a little worked up about that. But the last thing I want to hit is James O'Keefe. You remember, he used to be Project Veritas, and then they idiotically pushed him out, so he's out. So he has his own group now, which is called OMG, O'Keefe Media Group. So James O'Keefe went undercover in Washington. And let me just tell you the quick thing, what Project Veritas did, what James O'Keefe does, he basically uses hidden cameras and sets people up to get them to tell the truth about something that's happening. So his, this, I had this, James O'Keefe Strikes, DC Sex Extortion Rot Exposed. That's what I called this segment. James O'Keefe Strikes, DC Sex and Extortion Rot Exposed. So James O'Keefe goes up to Washington, and he's not even really in disguise. It's rather amazing. You know, he kind of looks like himself, but he goes up to Washington, and he ends up getting a secret recording of someone having a conversation with someone. And this is a guy who thinks he's on a gay date. He thinks he's on a gay, you know, hookup date kind of thing. So he, this is a staffer in Washington. Very quick story. The staffer who's being recorded by James O'Keefe is a strident Democrat who loves Nancy Pelosi, but somehow has a job working for a Republican in Congress. And what he's exposing, I can play a short clip now. I have a short clip. What he's exposing is how radically compromised many people in Washington are, many people who represent you and others around this country because of the kind of behavior engaged in Washington by some people, which is essentially, he's talking about, if you remember, I don't know when it was, a couple of years ago, but anyway, Madison Cawthorn used to be a member of Congress, and he made a statement about, he basically revealed to the country, I think it was on Gateway Pundit, yeah, in March of 2022, Gateway Pundit, this guy Madison Cawthorn told the story of, there are sex orgies in Washington, they are, you know, it's members and other members, members and outsiders, and people get compromised, people get put in a position where they are able to then come to them and say, you know, we have this on you, so here's how you're going to vote. Here's what you're going to do. Madison Cawthorn told that story. Gateway Pundit published it. He was promptly lost his next election. But what you're going to hear in just a second is James O'Keefe managed to get this guy who believed he was on a date, a gay date, is telling him, this guy who works on Capitol Hill, telling him all about it. Let's play the tape, please, Mr. Ziggy.
Hey, you're not like, you're not a Trump fan, are you?
No. John don't need to die. John don't need to die.
Huh?
I said, well, then John don't need to go. The majority of the work that I do is policy because that's what my degree is in.
Policy?
So it's focused in policy. And so I do a lot of, that's why I go to a lot of embassies and a lot of events at the White House.
That sounds, you went to the White House?
I go to the White House.
Could you have to keep your mouth kind of shut because you're working for a Republican and you can't say?
Well, I don't, yeah, I really keep it to myself.
So you're like besties with Nancy Pelosi?
I love Nancy. My picture of Nancy Pelosi and I is on my desk.
I don't know if your constituents would want to know that though, huh? Would they be pissed
they
off?
They
don't care.
If they do, they kiss the crack of my ass. There's a lot of things that I do here, and there's a lot of things that I see with my own eyes. Madison Cawthorn one line knew them. That man in a wheelchair, that video that came out with the guy who sent it off the building in the hearing room.
Oh yes, I saw that.
Okay,
yeah.
The guy was blackmailed.
He was blackmailed?
Pretty much.
Whoa.
So most members, they actually have spouses that are married. They have affairs with other council people, Congress people, Congress members getting off. And they have like parties and stuff.
Like you're talking about sex parties.
Yeah, they want to talk a lot.
So these parties are like, it gets hot and heavy.
Yeah, it's like an in-house thing. If you know, you know. If you don't, you don't. But 9 out of 10 times, everybody in there knows. But they actually, that is a fact. They actually do have these parties.
Does that happen a lot? Like people do something sexual and they blackmail? Have you seen that?
So it happens every now and then.
But they get blackmailed.
Exactly.
Holy sh.
Okay. So you have to, first of all, the guy speaking, the main one on the camera, is a staffer in the United States Congress. And he's talking about how, I cut a very long clip, and you could read this yourself if you just look up James O'Keefe's latest thing. But this is a staffer in Washington telling, he doesn't realize it's James O'Keefe. And by the way, O'Keefe is barely even disguised. I guess they'd never heard of him. I mean, I would have recognized him, I think. But in any case, he's telling all about this endless, he talks about people coming in late, hungover because they've been wild. He talks about Washington as a wild scene full of extreme, of people who are engaged in, you know, sex orgies, just compromises. So they're told how to vote. They're told on this issue, this is what he said they call them suggestion memos, but everybody knows that you need to go along because they have things on you. They're able to blackmail you. Let me make something very clear. I have several friends who are members of Congress. I am not saying that every member of Congress is guilty of this. I have no idea what the percentage is. I don't know if it's a small percentage or if it's, you know, bigger. I don't know what the percentage is. But I do know this story that was first Madison Cawthorn brought out in 2022 saying, let me just tell you that Washington is full of sex orgies. It's full of people who then get compromised. They have something on you. And so therefore, it is something you should, that is a cause for concern, because sometimes you hear people come and they campaign their districts. They tell you, oh, I stand for this, I'm against this. And they go and vote the other way. And there may be many other reasons that explain their votes. But one is, and what this James O'Keefe is saying is, this is a rampant culture like that in Washington. This guy goes on to explain how much money he makes. He doesn't care that he doesn't believe in his job. He gets paid, even though he doesn't, you know, he's not Republican at all. He wants Donald Trump to die. He loves Nancy Pelosi. He gets paid lots of money because he likes to go buy designer clothes. And I mean, the guy is just, you know, and this is someone, a Washington, D.C. member of Congress chose to hire. I mean, just think about that one. And the guy has been to the White House, been to embassy parties. And, you know, I think that there was another video as well. I only saw one. James O'Keefe came back with two, but there was another one as well. I think these kind of things are just really, really wise to keep in mind when you look at someone you thought you liked pretty well, who is a member of Congress, a candidate, you elect them. You know, there are reasons people go off the deep end. This isn't the only one. But the fact that this does occur, that in fact, this guy who was in that video later said, oh, Madison Cawthorn wasn't lying. He wasn't lying at all, or something like that. He's basically saying, of course that happens. And I don't mean to be Pollyanna. I understand that, you know, society is not full of, Puritans, 100%. But I will say, representing your constituents in Congress is one of the most noble things that the founders thought up the idea about. The idea we have people in Congress represent the values and principles and beliefs of their constituents, of their district. And when you are so compromised, you can't do that because you've been engaged in behavior that you can be blackmailed about. This is bad for everybody. It's bad for the country. So I'm going to dig more into James O'Keefe's story, but I think it is important to understand that this is out there now. And I don't know if that guy still has a job or not. I don't know. But I do think the kind of thing that exposes what people really do when no one's watching is important for us, because I don't really want to, I'm not curious about anyone else's personal intimate life with anybody. I'm not interested. I am interested in having representatives in Washington, Austin, every other state capital to represent the people who elect them and represent the values and principles those people stand for. I think it's really, really vital. A lot more I could do in that, but I'm frankly out of time. So before I turn to why it matters to you, which I do at the close of every show, I want to make two quick pitches for you. I am running for RNC committee woman for the state of Texas. If you like this show, no matter where you are, you can endorse my campaign. My website is debbiegforrnc.com. You can see at the top of the screen, Debbie G, the digit for RNC.com. You can endorse there. You can submit questions. I would love your endorsement wherever you are. Love to have you tell me why you support. If you'd like to do that in the comment section, love to have your endorsement. Also urge you to check out our website, AmericaCanWeTalk.org. At that website, filled with all our past interviews, information, etc. Also want to thank Brighteon TV, BRIGHTEON.TV. They carry the show. I'm grateful for Brighteon TV. They make this show available to many people around the country. Also want to thank Real News PR, where I do this show, and Real News Communication Network. My substitute producer today, Ziggy, is here because I'm in Austin, and my regular producer, Emilio, at home. So appreciate them, appreciate all of them. So I close the show every day, every time I do a show, by telling you why the stories we talked about today matter to you. So we started our show today talking about our border back convoy and the border bill sellout. Have the American people ever experienced a greater disconnect with their, quote, leaders? Texas Convoy has formed to reinforce the people's demand for border security. Border cities and towns rallying to support the truckers, just like the Canadian truckers and the Canadian people. The Senate border bill is such a massive sellout of the people's border security concerns. Even McConnell and Lankford, the bill's architects on the GOP side, are walking it back. Never anticipated the intensity of voter backlash. Voter backlash is growing against the deep state. I'm going to say that more slowly. Sorry. Voter backlash is growing against the deep state and the Uniparty across many issues, Ukraine, border activity, J6, election fraud. The remedy is called MAGA and Trump 2024. American justice system, Tina Peters plus the J6 Middletons. Never forget, real Americans are suffering real injustice and suffering and harm at the hands of the installed cabal that has weaponized the rule of law in our precious America. Tina Peters, Gold Star Mom, exposed and proved outcome-changing election fraud in Colorado, now on trial and facing prison as a Colorado DA juxtaposed case into a narrow focus on process, ignoring, making it impossible for her to submit evidence of what she uncovered in the case because it's not relevant to the charge they're bringing her. Peters not allowed to put on evidence of the election fraud that was exposed. Mark and Julius Middleton, apolitical Texas farmers drawn to J6 protests because of their love for America and deep sense that 2020 election was stolen, which it was, praying at the Capitol, never entered, now on trial in Washington, D.C., facing 20 years in prison. These are unconscionable injustices, dark scars on Colorado and on America. And James O'Keefe strikes D.C. sex and extortion rot exposed. O'Keefe's media group, OMG, released additional videos of Capitol intern and congressional staffer. The emerging picture of reality inside the Beltway, elected officials quickly drawn into entrapment schemes, usually sex and or drugs, participate due to their own moral weaknesses and end up being compromised, blackmailable, extortable, controlled. Result, legislation does not emerge from the consent of the governed via elected representatives. It emerges from the desires of those in control of the entrapment schemes. Is this really the government the American people deserve? 2024 represents a watershed election. Clean out the deep state or face the end of the republic. One last thing, on my Thursday shows each week, I have a wonderful in-studio audience. I have great guests. This week we have joining us a great thing in Texas. And one reason I want to tell you about ahead of time, because you could replicate this in your state. We have an organization in Texas called the True Texas Project, TTP, True Texas Project. The two women in charge are joining me in studio Thursday, Julia McCarty and Fran Rhodes. You'll hear about what they do, how amazingly effective it is, and maybe you could just try it in your state too. I am Debbie Georgiadis. This is America Can We Talk. I do this show to speak truth about America because America matters. And I will talk to you next time. Like a crashing
wave. Can you hear us now? America Can We Talk? Truth about America. Can you hear